I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jason Forrest. Jason is a thought leader and behavioral change expert on a mission to convince everyone he knows that they are enough. He's a sales trainer, a management coach, and the author of three books, including his latest, Leadership Sales Coaching. Jason is chairman of the National Speakers Association's Million Dollar Speakers Group. He's been awarded Training Magazine's Top Young Trainer and a Gold Stevie Award for Sales Training Leader of the Year. His Leadership Sales Coaching Program won the top sales training management program in the world. And in 2016, his company, FPG, was named to Inc. 5000's fastest growing company list and also was named a best place to work in Fort Worth, Texas. Jason is an expert at creating high performance cultures through complete training programs, and he incorporates experiential learning to increase profit, implement cultural accountability, and transform companies into high performance organizations by unleashing their human performance. Jason, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you've certainly accomplished quite a lot for yourself and your company. And I love the way you are described as someone who wants to convince everyone he knows that they are enough. So what happens when people tell us that we can't achieve our objectives?
Well, I mean, it depends on your own self-worth. It depends on your own I am enough level. So, for example, if your whole life has been dependent upon other people's approval and what other people have said you can or cannot do, then you'll probably take that pretty seriously. But if you have decided and made the commitment that your I am dimension, your I am enough level is based upon your own belief in yourself and your own belief in your abilities, and you know that you're only limited based upon your own imagination, then you probably wouldn't listen to it. You probably would realize that that's their own personal demons that are just kind of fighting against you. And so what you would end up doing is you would probably seek out the coaches along the way that would make all the difference. One of the things that I believe, it's the two truths to my success, and I think a lot of people's success, is that our beliefs have more to do with our success than our abilities, meaning that everything we do in life, all of our abilities, we use to the level that we believe is possible. So I believe every human being wakes up every morning with a dollar sign of what they think they're worth. And so you think of it from a sales perspective, it's very easy. Because if a person wakes up and says, okay, I am a $50,000 salesperson. I'm worth $50,000. I'm worth $100,000. Well, they will use their abilities to make that number true. And we all do that. That's a human nature thing. But it's not a behavioral thing. It's a belief thing. So you can have two different people, which I've seen all the time. I teach them the same exact skills on how to make $200,000 a year, and one person will take those same skills and they will make $200,000. The other person in the same class will take those same skills and they will use those to make $50,000. The only difference is the belief that they have about themselves and their own self-worth, their own self-compassion, their own self-efficacy, their own self-confidence is all connected to that. And the second truth to our success is that the coaching along the way makes all the difference, meaning that no one in life actually achieves their full greatness without some sort of coaching along the way, without some sort of mentor or guide that is giving them the insight in order to become and perform at a higher level. It's not that a person can't perform great things on their own. It's just, I believe my life is too short to figure out how to do it on my own. And so if I can find other people that have already been where I want to go and I can ride their experience coattails and learn from them, then I can really kind of skip a lot of years. I can skip a lot of my own trials and tribulations because I can learn from their successes and failures. So those are the two truths. Our beliefs have more to do with our success than our abilities, and the coaching along the way makes all the difference. And so that's the biggest thing I would say, is when someone's not achieving their objectives, or someone says you're not going to achieve your objectives, you know, first I would ask themselves, is it a belief issue, or is it a behavioral issue? And if it's a behavioral issue, then you just need, they need to find the skills, they need to find the knowledge in order to be more successful. But if they already have the knowledge, then it might be a belief thing. They might have some rules or leashes or alibis that are keeping them from using the knowledge they already know. And so they might have to remove those leashes. They might have to remove those alibis, those rules, in order to let the knowledge come free.
And where do those self-limiting beliefs come from? Because I think most of us have various levels of self-limiting beliefs.
Well, I would say every human being has self-limiting beliefs, not just some people. The difference is, I mean, even the president of the United States has self-limiting beliefs. It's just they have less self-limiting beliefs than someone else. but it's because the idea behind it is if their current level of performance is equal to their current belief system. And so the limiting beliefs come from their parents. They start off coming from their parents, and the negative love patterns that we get from our parents, as far as, you know, what we were told that was possible for us to achieve. I mean, a lot of us, you know, if you look at Carol Dweck's work from Stanford, she wrote this amazing book called Mindset, and she talks about how, you know, for a long time we thought that you were born with either a growth mindset or a fixed mindset. And a growth mindset is, you know, you believe that your brain is malleable, and you believe that you have neuroplasticity, and that you can constantly create new myelin connections and new connectors in order to change your brain, change your pathways, in order to change your outcomes. That's a growth mindset. A fixed mindset is that this is the hand that you've been dealt. Well, a lot of us have been raised by our parents. When something is very difficult, the first thing that our parents tell us, or our schools tell us, is, well, maybe you're not supposed to do math. Maybe you're not supposed to do football. Maybe you're not supposed to do reading. Maybe that's not what you're supposed to do. Well, that's not necessarily true. It just could be because it's difficult at the time, but it doesn't mean you're not supposed to do it. And so we have to be careful what information we're taking in, because, I mean, even look at our school systems today. I mean, the schools today were originally created to help the industrial worker out. They were created to create a certain level of skills for the person. Well, that school system has not changed since it was originally created by a guy named Horace Mann. And so, I mean, even back in the original days, I don't know if you know this kind of fun fact, but, you know, the school system, they actually would label that these are kind of the ordinary kids. These are the people who, you know, that need to learn kind of the ordinary skills, and that's how we treated them. You know, well, that hasn't changed today. I mean, we're still kind of treating them according to the same thing, versus, you know, you look at some of the progressive schools out there where they realize, let's really cater an experience based upon the intelligence of the child and what their desires, their gifts, their energies lie. That's very different than a lot of the thinking out there. So that's what I would say. I mean, limiting beliefs, again, they come from our parents, they come from our schools, they come from our peers, they come from the media, they come from the books we've read, the classes we've attended, and you know, people, they listen to that stuff and they believe it to be true, but it's not necessarily true.
Yeah, that whole description of the school system, I find quite frightening.
It's very true, though.
I know it's true.
Yeah, I mean, I had a great conversation with my teacher, my son's teacher. He's 8 years old, and we actually go to a very progressive school, and I'm very proud to be at that school. But I mean, even she said, you know, we're having a hard time with your son right now because we can't connect to him. And I said, well, my son has the CEO disease. And they said, well, what is that? And I said, well, he's got the same disease I have, which is ADHD. And I said, what do you think when most teachers are talking, what do you think the kids are thinking about? And she said, well, probably how fast can the teacher stop talking? And I said, that's probably correct. I said, but my kid is not even listening to you at all. He's building inventions. He's literally building inventions in his head, and the entire day he's building things. Well, he's just he's a thought leader. He's an inventor. He's the future Tony Stark or Elon Musk, right? But schools don't know how to deal with that. So it's just an evolution that we have to be aware of. And so, you know, if the wrong teacher got a hold of someone like my son or some of the other amazing kids that are out there, then they would say, you know, he's not smart. I mean, even look at Thomas Edison. Have you heard that story about Thomas Edison?
Many times. As a matter of fact, I like to use it as an example. Not so much the way that he may have been treated by others, but by as an example of how many steps he was, it took him, and he had the diligence to pursue before he was able to get a light bulb to work sufficiently.
Yeah, but that was an outcome, though. What's important about this, about Thomas Edison's story, is the story before the light bulb story, right? And the story before the light bulb story is that he brought a letter home to his parent, to his mom, and he couldn't read the letter. And the letter said, that your child is not mentally acceptable for our school, and we're going to expel him. Well, the mother reads the letter to Thomas Edison and says, retranslates the letter to him and says, Thomas, the school says that you're too much of a genius for this school and that you must be homeschooled because the school is not enough for you. So many years later, after his mother died and he became the great inventor, he read the letter that was originally created where the school said he is too dumb for the school, not he's a genius. And he goes on and writes in his journal that the reason I'm a genius is because of my mom. It's because of my mom saw me as a genius. So that's all programming. That's all belief systems and that's programmed and created by our kids. I mean, but think about that. If Thomas Edison didn't have his mom, then and his mom to stand up for him and say what he said, then he would have been a mentally deficient child who would have been expelled from school. And then who knows what would have happened.
Yeah, it's a great story. So Jason, with that in mind, what is the paradox of success? I know you talk about it in your current book, Leadership Sales Coaching.
Well, in this case particularly, I wrote this, you know, a few years ago because, you know, when I work with organizations, they just drive me nuts when it comes to being victimized based upon the economy and the circumstance. You know, and they go out there and they say, okay, in order to sell a lot, which that's really the ultimate goal of every business. I mean, we're in business to make money. I mean, that's the purpose of a business. And in order to make money, you got to sell stuff at a higher value and in a profit in order to make it happen. Well, most people think in order to do that, then we got to get these P's in line, you know, the P's of marketing and sales. And the P's of marketing are product, price, promotion, positioning, packaging, and place. And so we got to have the right product, the right price, the right, you know, website, the right positioning strategy. Where's our niche? Where's our price point? Packaging as far as the brochures and how it looks, and in place as far as where we're going to put it in, as far as location wise in a retail store or a certain place. Well, and I consider those to be table stakes. So just to like, it's like an ante for a, you know, for a poker game, but that's what everyone focuses on. And they say, okay, well, if someone's not buying my stuff, well, I need to either create a better product, or I need to create a better website, or I need to have a lower price, or I need to throw more stuff in for the same price. And, you know, to me, that's a red ocean strategy, right? From the book Blue Ocean. It's a strategy. It's a bloodbath. And so the only organizations that have really separated themselves from their industry are the ones that have created the P's of sales, which is people, process, and presentation. And that's where once you get the P's of marketing right, I mean, you got to get it right. Again, they got to be in the game. But once you get those right, the only way to beat the competition is to focus on people, which is the belief systems of your people. So again, it's like right now, are you leading your team as Thomas Edison's mom? Or are you leading the team as Thomas Edison's teacher that expelled him? And most organizations are leading their teams as Thomas Edison's teacher, not Thomas Edison's mom. And so they're not building self-worth and self-value and self-efficacy in their team. And their teams are always very dependent upon the leader. You know, most organizations are run like North Korea. You know, they've got one dictator that's the smartest guy in the room or smartest girl in the room, and everyone else is a bunch of pawns, and they just wait for the person to make decisions. Well, you know, that's not, you're not getting the human capital of your organization if that's what you're focused on. And so you got to really work on those belief systems by training them properly, but also removing those leashes, removing those rules, those scotomas, those alibis, those fears that keep them from using what you've taught. And then number two is that process. So there's an order to things. You know, the most successful people are very procedural based. They're not option based. And that's a very distinct concept. So I'm a NLP level three master certified. And when the idea behind, when it comes to the human condition, the behaviors of human beings, the neuropsychology of human beings, you're either procedural based or option based. So option based means, well, I just go with the flow. Every customer is different. I'm constantly making adjustments based upon the circumstance situation. But that's not the top professionals out there. The top professionals out there are very procedural based. They know that I'm going to do A, and then I'm going to do B, and then I'm going to do C. And they know there's an order to things. And they might make adjustments or tweaks based upon certain things, but they're not going to change the game every single time. I mean, you look at even the greatest coaches out there, in sports, for example, like Augie Garrido, the winningest baseball coach in college history, or Bill Belichick, or Pete Carroll, or Nick Saban. I mean, these coaches are very procedural based. I mean, even the great Bill Walsh would say that he mapped out the first quarter of every football game, lined out as far as the exact order of the plays that he would run. Now, he might make audibles and adjustments, but it was pre-thought out, where every other coach he played against were actually more option based. They only had the first, like, you know, first four plays called out. They wouldn't have the entire quarter. And so they were in a constant frantic panic mode, making adjustments along the way, where he was just very calm and cool and collective because he had already played this whole thing out in his head, and he knew all was just about execution. And as long as he can execute better than the other team, he would win on any given Sunday. And therefore he has. I mean, he's considered to be the winningest coach when it comes to the Super Bowls and the victories that he's won, with Bill Belichick now is coming in very close to him. And then last is the presentation, and that's the words out of a salesperson's mouth. So think of the process as the order they do things when it comes to working with the customer. The presentation is what is the statements they use, the selling messages, the questions they use. And those are very important as well. And those need to be very thought through. And so my whole thing is, in order to really change the game, in order to get, to be better in your competition, unless you've created some sort of iHome, or some sort of I something. I use I in the sense of Apple's created a product that you don't really need to have honestly great people, process, or presentations at Apple, because they just really have created better products. But eventually they're not going to. Eventually, there's going to be a day where someone else is going to have products that are equal to them. And then now they're going to be in a different game. And that's when they're going to have to, focus on the people, process, presentation.
Mm. Now, are the procedures as you describe them in any way in conflict with the humans that need to be part of the procedures? Because humans are somewhat unique, and the way people behave and interact can be quite complex.
I would say yes and no about that. I mean, it's amazing how, when it comes to the human condition, we are complex, but we do have some basic kind of rules that we all live by. So, for example, let's talk about the six human needs of psychology. So you have certainty. So we're all driven by these certain needs, right? So certainty, I want to feel safe. I want to feel secure. Variety, I want to have fun. I want to change things up. I want things to be different and new. Significance, I want to feel like I'm special and I matter. Connection, I want to feel like I'm connected to other human beings or nature or some sort of process or experience. And then growth, which is I want to feel like I'm getting better. And contribution, I want to feel like my kind of voice matters. Well, every human being is driven towards those six human needs. And so the only reason why we even buy things, for example, is because our current product or service is not fulfilling those needs anymore, or at least some of them. So when it comes to addiction psychology, so one of my certifications is in addiction psychology. Well, the reason why we become addicted to something is because a certain vehicle, a certain product or service is fulfilling at least three of those six human needs. So the reason why we, for example, get tired of the home that we live in and want to buy a new home is because when we first bought it, it gave us certainty, it gave us variety, it gave us significance, it gave us, contribution or growth or connection. Well, as our life changes, the home doesn't change with us. So our life's evolving, but our home is staying the same. And so that means our life is growing to the point where we don't feel safe anymore, or we don't feel significant anymore. We don't feel like we connect to the neighbors anymore. We don't feel like it's contributing to our family life anymore and giving them the life that we want them to have. We don't feel like it's new and it's got new shiny things, which is variety. So, so it's not as complex as you think it is. And that's what I'm saying is, if you look at if you study really the highest level achieving anyone. So let's just take salespeople. I mean, they'll tell you that, there might be a cultural buyer. There might be an absentee buyer. There might be, a buyer that doesn't have all decision makers present, but there's basically a procedure that I run. And let's say there's an absentee buyer all of a sudden that comes in, which is like a different decision maker that's not present. Well, I have a different procedure that I run when that scenario happens. But all of them are already pre-thought out as in procedures, and they just run the procedure. They're not constantly changing the procedures as they go, because they wouldn't be able to guarantee their results.
Just like planning out the plays for the quarter.
Same exact thing.
Yeah. So Jason, going back to what you were talking about earlier, where coaching makes all the difference, how do you, if you want to be that person that is really going to excel, and you realize how important getting the right kind of guidance and support is, how do you find what you need?
Oh, great. So how do you find the right coach?
Yeah.
That's a great question. So, you know, to me, I personally, this is just me personally, as far as what I would look for in a coach. One, I look for someone who is better than I am in what I'm obviously trying to be coached at, right? So, and that takes really removing your ego. Now, I personally, just in a lot of quantifiable things that I'm doing, is if I'm trying to be coached in one certain area, let's say, okay, so for example, I used to be a speaker that was earning about $200,000 a year in speaking fees. Okay. So this year our company is going to do over $3 million in speaking fees and training service and so forth. Well, I didn't get that on my own. I found a guy named Steve Siebold, who is the author of Mental Toughness and, you know, runs the Gove Siebold speech workshop, from originally a guy named Bill Gove, is kind of the godfather of professional speaking. And you know, I researched and kind of found, like, I kept asking questions like, who's the person who's the best at teaching people how to be million-dollar speakers? And I kept asking. Well, Steve Siebold's name kept popping up, you know? So you ask multiple people, and when the same name kind of pops up, you kind of go, okay, well, it sounds like it means something, especially when you start asking people with higher criteria and higher, you know, people that are making more money than you. And so then I just basically went to him and I said, hey, I want to be trained by you, and went through his course. And it's interesting though, because so for example, in that year, I went through his 12-month course, and I went from $200,000 a year and broke $1 million in speaking fees through his program. Now, he will go on and say that he has personally trained several six-figure speakers and only one seven-figure speaker, which is me. And a lot of times I'll have people, like applicants, that will call me and say, hey, why are you the only seven-figure speaker? And I say, because I'm very procedural based. I take my ego out of it. I submit to people that are better than me. And in this case, I use better being they make more money than me. And so the guy makes over $1 million in speaking fees. I made $200,000 a year in speaking fees. He's clearly better. And they would say, well, but aren't, don't you want your own style? Don't you want to have your own voice? Not until I make $1 million a year, and then I'll create my own voice. You know, so I mean, like, I don't want to have my own voice making 200 when someone else is making $1 million. I want to learn. I just tell me exactly what to do. I'll be a great clone. I'll ride your experience coattails. Tell me exactly what to say, when to stand, how to stand, in what order. You've obviously cracked the code, and so I'll hack it. I'm going to hack the code system, and by following you. And then once I get to that level, then I will use my own free will and human liberties to say, okay, now I want to add my own art to the science. But that's no different than, like, you know, Danielson and Karate Kid. I mean, the guy said, you know, paint the fence and, you know, whatever, wax the sand the floor, before he said, we're going to teach you how to fight. And that's the problem with most human beings, is, again, they're kind of very option based, right? They just, you know, they just want to learn how to fight before they learn the basics. Or my son, you know, I was trying, or my daughter, you know, she's in dance, and she just wants to dance. She just wants to dance like the people on So You Think You Can Dance. But she's not willing currently to go through the practice of dance school. And she's like, I just don't want to do this. I don't want to learn the steps. I just want to dance. And I said, I get it, but you're not going to look like they look on TV until you learn the steps. And then once you learn the steps, then you can add your own human creative freedom and make it your own, and make it your own art form. But you can't start with the art. If you start with the art with no science, you're going to have really crappy art.
Yeah, it can be a hard concept to internalize, accept, and follow for a lot of people.
It's the single reason, in my opinion, why majority. I mean, you got what, less than 1% of companies make over $1 million a year. I mean, why you've got. I mean, it's the single thing that, I mean, it's just, it's, look, it's too, it's what Jim Rohn even said. Jim Rohn would say, guys, it's too easy to be rich in America. It's too easy to be rich. The problem is easier not to be. I mean, but that's the human condition. So that's all I am not enough stuff. See, when Brené Brown did that amazing TED talk on the power of vulnerability, the last line of the TED talk said, when I can say I am enough, I start listening and I stop screaming. So just break that down. So what she's saying is, when a person says I'm not enough, I scream a lot in the form of alibis and excuses, and I do not listen in the form of coaching. Because if you don't believe you're enough, then what's the point of coaching? You know, what's the point of you know, you're not going to take ownership for your life and take full responsibility for your outcomes. Well, that's an I am enough thing. So the reason why people don't follow other people or don't ride the experience coattails is not because of discipline. It's strictly because of their belief system of not being enough. It's their ego that gets in the way.
Big time. Big time. Yeah. Jason, what do you see as the difference between getting support from the kind of coach you just described versus getting support from peers, like in a peer community?
Oh, I think peer support is amazing. I would just caution the peer support. So for example, like in EO, we've got rules for peer support. So in the Entrepreneurs Organization, one of our rules or guidelines is whenever you give support, you only share experiences, you don't give advice. And the reason for that is because everyone kind of needs to call their own path. And if you're a peer and you're not considered to be an authority over someone, well, it's hard to listen to someone else's advice because, again, that ego gets in the way. So if someone says, you and I are peers, and I say, here's how you should run your business, well, you're going to say, well, gosh, but you don't know how, you know, you're not me though. And that's not, I mean, you're just immediately, you're going to have all of these leashes or rules that are going to get in the way of your belief system. And so one of the guidelines I always say is that when you're getting peer support, one, you know, encouragement is number one, but number two is just ask for experiences. So for example, you would say, so in this situation that I'm in right now, from your experience, can you share an experience of how you've dealt with that in the past? Even if it didn't go well, I still want to know what you did, what the outcome was, and what the lessons learned, but I don't want you to tell me what to do. And then I'll take the information and then I'll decide what to do with it. Because as a peer, I haven't given you authority over my life. And so that's very difficult for most people to do, is to truly have unfiltered advice from a peer, because you consider to be equal. Now, if you're a coach and I pay you for my advice, which I have several coaches every month that I pay for personal advice from, well, that's different, because I'm asking, tell me what to do in this situation. And that's a different type of situation. But it all depends on if they're a peer or they're someone that's you have given the respect of authority over your life.
Yeah, no, that's a really great distinction. Jason, whom do you know personally who has been successful at smashing plateaus?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, it's a tough question. I know a lot of people. I know Hillary Strassner, who is in my EO group, who just sold her company ProLab. And, you know, Harvard writes a paper on her every year in the entrepreneur program. You know, she's smashed some huge plateaus. I mean, the sales professionals that I work with, and all the clients who work with, I mean, they're constantly smashing plateaus because, I mean, what you're currently doing is equal to what you're currently getting. And so the only way to change what you're getting is change what you're doing. Well, that requires you to change, to break plateaus. You know, I developed this concept called, you either want a slug it out goal or you want to change the game goal. And this is a cool thing for all your listeners to think about, is that right now when you're planning your year, I mean, this is December, and you're planning your year in 2017, well, a slug it out goal is going to require you to work harder in order to give yourself, let's say, a 10% increase in productivity next year, or performance or results. I want 10% more. Well, you can do 10% more by just working harder, you know, spending more hours in the day, being more efficient and effective with your time. But if you want to change the game goal, is you go to someone and say, okay, well, what if I asked you to do 50% more? And they go, well, gosh, I don't know if I can increase my sales 50%. Okay, well, then in that case, it's not about working harder, it's about changing your thinking. And so to change your thinking is to say, okay, what are the things that I don't know right now that I should be knowing? What are the things that are holding me back? Are there other people that are in my same line of work that are doing 50% more than I'm doing right now with the same 40 hours a week? And how can I learn from them? How can I change my thinking? How can I create exponential growth versus organic growth? And that to me is the better way to think. And once you start doing that, then you really can smash plateaus. But if you're just slugging it out year after year, you know, you're not really smashing plateaus. You might be raising the plateau ceiling, but you're not smashing plateaus. Does that make sense?
That is a great distinction. I think a really good way to describe it. Jason, what can we look forward to from you in the near future?
Yeah, so I have so much cool stuff coming out. So the big thing I'm working on right now is I'm really wanting to. Well, I got two books that are on the horizon. So one is a book called Gladiator Selling, and the tagline is unleashing your sales performance. And I really want to write this book. I've been teaching this concept for a long time in our training programs, but I haven't actually written the book yet. And I'm just so tired of the majority of the sales books out there are actually doing more harm than good. They're actually creating more leashes, more rules, more alibis, and they're actually creating more fear and more excuses for salespeople. And so I'm getting to a point where I gotta write my own and create that. So that's coming out this year, Gladiator Selling. And then the next book I'm working on at the same time is called Unleashing the Millennial Power. And that's basically the idea behind that is in 2016, we have more millennials in our workforce than baby boomers. They've crossed the threshold now. But organizations are not really tapping into their unique power. We're kind of managing around them. And majority of people I talk to, they say, you know, I got these millennials I got to deal with. And they kind of want to manage around them. But my whole thing is stop trying to manage around them. And why don't we start unleashing their true potential and their power? And if you're the company that does that, I mean, you're in a different, you've now smashed a plateau.
Because, yeah, let's embrace them.
It's a different level. It's a different level. It's looking at millennials from a perspective of love versus fear. It's how can they help me versus how can I make them work for me? And that's just, it's a different question. And so I've done a lot of, research on that. And I've done a lot of talks on that. And so that's the one that I'm really, really excited about because I'm tired of millennials getting a bad rap. I'm not a millennial. I'm almost a millennial, but I employ a lot of millennials and I think they're amazing. I got millennials. We had three interns this summer that were millennials that were in college and they all worked for free. And one of them wanted to work for us so bad that he had a part-time job to pay for his expenses so he could work for us for free. And the guy worked like a machine, you know? And so it just, people aren't looking in the right way.
Wow. That's really exciting. So two new books coming out, lots of presentations, lots of other stuff. How can people learn more about you, follow you, and get more of what we just discussed in the last half hour?
Yeah. I mean, the simplest thing is just go to fpg.com. So F is in forest, P is in performance, G is in group. So fpg.com. Definitely sign up for our newsletter. When you do that, you can get, we've got all kinds of tracks for you. So if you're a leader, you can get some videos on how to create a high performance culture. If you're a manager, you can get some lessons on how to be a coach. And if you're a salesperson, on how to be a sales gladiator. And so, you know, those are some free things that you can receive, as well as, of course, contacting us for information on our training programs and all that great stuff. And of course, I'm Jason Forrest Speaker is my Twitter handle as well. So, but love to connect, love to hear your feedback on what you guys thought about this podcast.
Oh, this has been great. Jason, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a really fascinating discussion. We've packed a lot into a short amount of time about self-worth, belief systems, getting help, what kind of coaching you should get, what kind of peer support you should get, limiting beliefs, people who are doing fabulous work. So thanks so much. I really appreciate your coming on.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
My guest today has been Jason Forrest, the founder and CEO of Forrest Performance Group. Thanks again, Jason, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-7000. 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.